and quietly questioning Eisner's judgment, which no longer seemed infallible. After all, he had championed Dick Tracy and dismissed Pretty Woman. Most of the studio's live-action films, even low-budget ones, were commercial and critical failures, forgotten almost as soon as they disappeared from screens. The multiplex cinema phenomenon offered more opportunity, but also more competition. Word of mouth and critical reception, so long the driving forces behind audience demand, began to give way to marketing blitzes, big stars, and event films that drew huge audiences to opening weekends. Other studios that year produced mega hits, Die Hard 2, Back to the Future 3, Total Recall. Even the family audience flocked to the non-Disney Home Alone and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, films that openly mimicked the Disney formula. By contrast, Disney produced the soon-to-be-forgotten Marrying Man, Run, Taking Care of Business, Spaced Invaders, to name a few, and turned down as too expensive the script for the Clint Eastwood thriller In the Line of Fire. In part due to the success of Michael Ovitz and his agents at CAA, costs soared for the kinds of stars as well as for big-name directors and screenwriters that could all but guarantee an opening weekend audience. For Disney, the sequel to the low-budget Three Men and a Baby became the high-budget Three Men and a Little Lady. The year's big hit wasn't a Disney film at all, but Home Alone, produced by Joe Roth, now the head of 20th Century Fox. The previous summer, Katzenberg had handed Dan Wolf, manager of public affairs for the studio, a copy of Eisner's analysis of the movie business while he was at Paramount. "I'd like to do something along these lines," Katzenberg told Wolf. "You know, put out my philosophy." Both were too busy to work on it, though, until Wolf joined Katzenberg the following August in 1990 at his house in Malibu, where the two spent hours together brainstorming, refining the singles and doubles strategy espoused by Eisner. Wolf wrote an 18-page draft, but then the project again languished. Though Eisner had declared the 1990s the Disney decade and renewed a promise to deliver 20% annual earnings growth over 5 years, Roy and other board members worried that such a feat was becoming mathematically impossible, given how fast Disney's earnings had already grown. "At that rate, we would have been over the moon by 2000," Roy noted. Business Week questioned Disney's strategy in June of 1990, quoting an analyst to the effect that "there are reasonable limits to how big the pie can get," and noted that former chief financial officer Gary Wilson unloaded his $60 million in Disney stock that year. As the year drew to a close, Katzenberg felt drained of his usually irrepressible optimism. David Geffen worried that he was depressed and recommended therapy. Katzenberg even thought about taking a leave from work. That Christmas, he retreated to the Kahala Hilton in Hawaii, where it rained every day. He read the biographies of William S. Paley and Samuel Goldwyn. He brooded about Dick Tracy and the performance of the studio. As his thoughts proliferated, he returned to the project he'd begun with Wolf and started calling him from Hawaii every day. New drafts were faxed back and forth. As Katzenberg continued, he grew more excited about this developing manifesto and its potential to restore the studio's magic.